Portions of today's program are mechanically reproduced. And now keep your dial set on Channel 26 for the finest of television programming.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission.
Relief. You two take care of labor.
Only intended for a plane, Captain.
Danger! Danger! Man your stations!
Run while you can, boss.
Welcome to Two Old Farts Talk Sci-Fi. I'm David Klink.
And I am Troy Harkin.
Welcome to our Halloween show.
Oh!
But yeah. I was used to call Halloween Halloween for some reason.
Yeah, and I just realized the other night that I used to do that too.
Yeah, it's weird. But anyways, we are looking at two seminal horror comedies of the 1960s, The Munsters and The Addams Family. And in particular, we'll look at two Halloween-related offerings. They're already Halloween built into them.
Sure.
But they actually had episodes that went so far as to be Halloween-based. And can you imagine those shows having a Halloween episode? That's just totally, you know, asymmetric, or I'm not sure what I'm saying at this point.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of like, well, not quite. I don't know if you want to call it meta, but I guess so. And then you have, we will discuss, there's one episode of one of the shows where there is a meta moment of multiple sort of Frankensteins or Frankenstein monster, I should say. But anyway, yes, sorry, David.
So from season one of Addams Family, we'll discuss Halloween with the Addams Family, as well as the first episode of season one of The Munsters, which was titled Munsters Masquerade.
And, you know, I've said before, David, that Frankenstein, or more correctly, yes, Frankenstein's monster, was my number one boogeyman as a small child. And Frankenstein would hold that spot until a little film called The Exorcist came into my life. And then that all changed. I wholly welcomed a version of Frankenstein's monster that was gentle, bumbling, and kind-hearted. Herman Munster was a welcome addition to my wee world. If Fred Gwynne could soften even just a little bit the psychological harm that had been done by Boris Karloff and Glenn Strange, then that was a good thing in my books. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. Fred Gwynne was a remarkable actor. He reminds me a bit of Cesar Romero, who played the Joker in the Batman series, in the sense that here is someone who's an accomplished actor who's having a chance to play a character so outside of anything that he's done before. But in this case, he isn't some homicidal maniac trying to kill Batman, even though I wouldn't mind seeing that episode. But Fred Gwynne, as Herman Munster, he was so affable, so good-humored. His smile, his laughter, just even his body movements and everything about him made you feel good.
Yep. And it was many, many years later when I rediscovered him in Pet Sematary, the film. And it wasn't until after I left the screening that I realized, oh, Fred Gwynne, that's Herman Munster. And it was really hard for me to wrap my head around for a while, because his portrayal in Pet Sematary is really wonderful and not at all like the goofy Herman Munster that we were given on the show. And that show, The Munsters, ran on CBS from Thursday, September 24th, 1964, to May 12th, 1966. So that encompassed two seasons and 70 episodes. And there would also be a motion picture thrown into the works as well. Now, the first thing that we have to do before we get ahead of ourselves in discussing either of these shows is to give some background on the brilliant, hilarious, and eccentric cartoonist, Charles Adams.
Yeah, and before we get to that, I was reintroduced to Fred Gwynne with my cousin Vinny as the judge. And he is so good in that it's incredible. But let's get back to Charles Adams, who was best known for his single-frame cartoons that ran in The New Yorker and other magazines from 1930s onwards. The Adams family would become his best-known creation, although the characters remained nameless until the television series went into production. Charles Adams' dark humor was not just a hallmark of his cartoons, but of his life as well. And thank you, Troy, for sharing me, you know, sending me a link and sharing some of the cartoons of Charles Adams, because they were so out there and so brilliant and wonderful. And the fact he didn't mention even the name of the strip and who these characters were, how brilliant is that?
Yeah. And I will make a note to myself to post some images on our Facebook page of Charles Adams family. And I always find it funny when you discover the cartoons, and it just feels like you know this world from the TV show. But again, let's just, I'm going to go back to, talking a little bit more about Charles Adams himself. In his 1988 obituary in the LA Times, they wrote, "His Manhattan apartment featured a collection of medieval armor, crossbows, maces, broadswords. An antique embalming table dominated the living room. His collection," Adams said, "reflected his escapism, his fondness for living in the past. The 16th century," he said, "was his favorite period, even though," quote, "it was probably a rotten time to live in," because everyone was beheaded and they had a lot of plagues. "But it's a romantic time that appeals to me," so said Charles Adams.
Hey, don't knock beheadings and plagues until...
No,
let's not. You have to be pretty romantic to be able to live in a time like that. That is for sure.
You know, I have to tell you, Dave, that believe it or not, I just in the past week kind of was thinking back romantically, pining for like lockdown.
Oh no!
It was like I just sort of thought, yeah, you know what? I got a lot of things I wanted to do done. I didn't have to put up with as many, you know, the deaths aside, it wasn't so bad. I think Charles Adams would agree if he had lived through it.
Yeah. Maybe live in interesting times, as they say. Now, a colleague at the New Yorker once described Adams as an urbane, relaxed, congenial man of great civility. He doesn't eat babies. He sounds very much like Gomez Adams, doesn't he? Now back to the Munsters.
All right. In mid-1963, television writers Alan Burns and Chris Hayward pitched their idea of a weird family to Universal. Now, according to Burns, quote, "We sort of stole the idea from Charles Adams and his New Yorker cartoons. Because Universal owned the Frankenstein character and the Dracula character for movie rights, they decided to take their characters instead of the characters that we had written." The project was later passed on to writers Norm Liebman and Ed Haas, who wrote the pilot script Love Thy Monster. early on, there was discussion about making the Munsters an animated show rather than live action. Now, David, can you break down the cast of the Munsters for us?
Absolutely. So Fred Gwynne, as we mentioned earlier, was Herman Munster, and clearly a parody of Frankenstein's monster. Al Lewis was Grandpa Munster, who is an aging vampire. And by the way, Fred Gwynne and Al Lewis had starred together on the comedy series Car 54, Where Are You? That was a very popular show a few years before that. Yvonne DiCarlo as Lily Munster. That's Herman's wife. And Butch Patrick as Eddie Munster, their son, who is a werewolf boy. The character of Marilyn was based on Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn is the freak, or what you might call the black sheep of the family, which almost makes me think of that Twilight Zone episode where, you know, beauty is bad and ugly is good.
That's right.
There were three Marilyns. This was kind of this thing they did in the 60s, you know, like Bewitched and so on. Somehow you would have someone else come in. Dick Sargent, Dick York, and all that kind of
That's
thing.
Right.
So there were actually three Marilyns. Beverly Owen was Marilyn number one. Pat Priest came in. I guess we could call her Marilyn number two. And she took over midway through season one. And then Debbie Watson as Marilyn number three in the film Munster Go Home.
Now, I was wondering when I learned about the fact that there were three Marilyns, David, like, I wonder what the record is for the most number of actors playing a character in a TV series. Like you mentioned, Bewitched. And I know on the Partridge Family, there was one of the kids, the youngest boy. They had two different kids play. I think his name was Chris. But anyway, they had two different people and they looked nothing alike, which is pretty funny. The first boy was like brunette, brown eyes. And the next one was blonde hair, blue eyes, which I guess looked a little bit more like Shirley Jones.
Yeah. Anyway, and we don't have to go too far, right? Like right around the mid 60s, we had Batman, which we often refer to as Batman 66. So there are two characters in there that had a number of different roles. One of them is Riddler, which I think was three different characters, but Catwoman,
right,
if you also include the movie, had at least three, if not four, different people playing that role.
That's right. I can't even believe that Catwoman didn't come to mind for me. But maybe that's because while we were prepping for this show, Carolyn Jones held my attention pretty firmly. Mm. But anyway, yet now to me, when I was doing the rewatch, it never really occurred to me, because I wasn't a regular watcher of this when I was young. But I always thought that Eddie was a vampire boy. I didn't realize that he was actually a vampire, but that little widow's peak that he had always reminded me of like Bela Lugosi and his widow's peak.
Exactly. The only thing that sort of gave it away a bit was in that first episode where he howls. And then the mother says later on, well, don't all kids howl at the,
yeah,
you know, when the moon comes out, doesn't every boy howl at the moon? And
that's
no,
right.
That's not the case.
Yeah. And he had that great little toy too. He had a doll called, I think, Woof Woof or something. And it was like a little Wolfman doll, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So with the Munsters, there was a lot of arduous makeup for the leads, but particularly so for Fred Gwynne as Herman Munster. And supposedly it would take hours for them to create the look of Frankenstein's monster, or the sort of the goofy rendering of that character. And yeah, it turned out, like a lot of shows, the Munsters ended up being canceled due to Batman 66, the Adam West Batman, which was sort of like a tsunami for a lot of shows at this time. And we were talking a little bit about Fred Gwynne and the things that he was in. I've never seen The Cotton Club. I don't know if you have, Dave, but
I think I missed that one.
Yeah, that's another big one, I guess, that he was in. And as I was researching this too, I was like, was Al Lewis around for Gremlins 2? Because there's a character in that film that is clearly riffing on Grandpa Munster. And it turns out it was played by actor Robert Prosky. And he's kind of like, what was the Ed Flaherty character? Count Floyd on SCTV. He was kind of like that, but he really was much closer to the actual Grandpa Munster. So if you get a chance to see Gremlins 2 this Halloween season, look for that sort of tip of the hat to the Munsters. And I also wanted to mention that the exterior set for the Munsters mansion on the Universal lot was repurposed and used many, many times over the years, including two Tom Hanks comedies, The Burbs and Dragnet, used the exterior of that place. So let's talk a bit about the first episode of the series, Munsters Masquerade. Here's the episode synopsis from Wikipedia. Marilyn's boyfriend, Tom Daly, invites the Munster clan to a masquerade. Eddie remains at home with Mrs. Morton as his sitter. Marilyn goes as Priscilla, Lily as little Bo Peep, Grandpa is Napoleon, and Herman is King Arthur in a suit of shining armor. And we'll let you know, too, that his face is covered with the helmet. At the party, Mr. Daly is dressed and made up as Frankenstein's monster. Herman tells him that he reminds him of someone and adds that it's unfortunate that he isn't wearing a costume at his own masquerade party, which angers Mr. Daly.
Excuse me.
Oh, hello. I don't believe we've met. I'm Albert Daly.
This is Miss Hansen.
How do you do?
How do you do? I'm Herman Munster. I can't quite place you, Mr. Daly, but you remind me of someone I know.
Really?
But it's a shame, Mr. Daly, you couldn't get a costume for your own masquerade party.
Dear.
And just that big, stupid King Arthur. He just insulted me. I don't care if Tom does have a crush on their niece. Those Munsters are the rudest people I ever met.
When it is time for the Best Costume Award, Herman is asked to take off his helmet. One man says that Herman should win for wearing one mask over another because, of course, he removes his helmet and he looks like Frankenstein's monster. Lily is then insulted that her husband has been dissed, and Marilyn, she's also angry with Tom's family. Tom takes Marilyn home, where he finally sees Herman and Lily without their costume, and Tom runs away into the night, but Marilyn is relieved to shake off that bad news. The episode, it sounds like I'm Scottish now, Dave. The episode was written by Joe Connolly and Bob Mosher. It was directed by Lawrence Dobkin. So what did you think of this one, Dave?
I really liked it. I thought it was hilarious. It was a great introduction to the whole family. Also, I think some of these shows back then, they really knew how to write and how to get things moving. It's sort of like when Stephen King on his book On Writing is referring to Strunken White about omitting needless words as one of his important things. One of the things with the beginning, if you just give me a minute here.
Yep.
The whole beginning, the first 30 to 45 seconds is so tight and really gets you into what's going on. It's just brilliant screenwriting. If anyone's interested in writing for the screen, this is just the perfect episode to take a look at. Begins with a woman and a man kissing, underscored by comedic music, which also sounds out of place, like instruments from the 16th century. It also has a slight macabre underbelly, if music has an underbelly. And then one of the things she says is, would you like to come in for a minute? And he's thinking, oh, that sounds very good, and meet my folks. So she's always bringing that up. And he keeps saying, why keep bringing that up? Now, it turns out later in the episode, we find out that she's been like four dates with him. And it's funny how there's little jokes like, you know, they're sort of old fashioned, she says, about the parents. So there's always these little one-liners
right.
that And it turns out that he does introduce her, and he wants to eventually meet the aunt and uncle. And she had mentioned that I've been with them since I was a baby, which is a very quick line of good backstory.
Yeah.
And already by the 30-second mark, he's already said, well, why not invite your parents to this party that they're having next week? And Herman Munster, you could see him behind the drapes, looking out, trying to check out what's going on. There's a bit of a Munster theme and a laugh track that's added in with him just looking, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And I love the needlework, this little image. There's Lily doing some needlepoint, doing something with this round thing. It's a spider missing a leg. Like, she hasn't quite yeah. knitted the black part of the eighth leg. It's got seven legs.
Right.
And it's kind of cool. These little fun tongue-in-cheek dialogue things. Like, you can't be too careful these days. There are a lot of strange people in this world. And also, we don't get out at night as much as we used to. You know, all these little things that come in. Yeah, and also even the line about, you know, by the way, Tom says it's a masquerade party. He says, I suppose we have to go for Marilyn's sake. I wish it wasn't or weren't a masquerade. I know what you mean. If there's anything that disturbs me is the idea that grown people like us dressing up in costume and looking ridiculous. The good parts are Fred Gwynne's facial expressions, his yeah, joy, his good humor. It shines through like a beacon.
Yeah.
And the fact that we've talked about this kind of thing before, like in Planet of the Apes, you have to have the makeup in such a way that you can still get facial expressions,
right.
still show the empathy, show the reactions, and so on behind that.
Oh yeah, and Fred Gwynne, just his mugging, which and I mean that in a great way, because
yeah.
you know you don't have this character without the mugging, which is hilarious in itself, because you know generally the Karloff Frankenstein, I mean, he's dead, right? This is a composite of dead people, so he plays it with almost expressionless through much of his portrayal of Frankenstein's monster. But Fred Gwynne couldn't be more animated. You know, his face is like he's filled with delight about everything, right? Or even when he's you know, when it's on the other end of the emotional spectrum, like you can read that. You know, there's probably nobody more demonstrative facially than Herman Munster.
Yeah, and there's all this logic, like it's so smartly written and brilliant. There's the whole thing where Tom is with his parents, and he's really glad that they have invited the, you know, he's gotten them to do that. And there's obviously some background stuff, because he's already spoken to his father to try to make sure it's okay with the mother. So the mother says something like, I hope they don't misspell their names, you know, on the invitation. I don't want it to look like I have I'm entertaining a couple of monsters. And one of my favorite moments is after the mother leaves and you have a father-son moment there. And the son goes up to the father and says, you know, if we invite Marilyn's folks, it will really help me out with her. You know how it is. And the father says, son, I haven't known how it is for years.
Yeah.
That's such a wonderful, witty moment.
I just wanted to say, Dave, that one of the things that struck me immediately at the beginning of the episode, when you go to the interior of 1313 Mockingbird Lane, is that it really does pay tribute to those early Universal films with the lighting. It was totally authentic, like chiaroscuro, darkness versus a little bit of light. Unlike the Addams Family, which is beautifully shot, but very well lit. It's not like you're not dealing with shadow the way you are at Mockingbird Lane. And I just think, I guess, because these are the monsters that we know from Universal, that they probably do feel more relaxed in the darkness. Oh, and sorry, I'll let you respond to that if you want, Dave, but it also occurred to me that, oh yeah, right, Lily is clearly Frankenstein, the Bride of Frankenstein.
Mm.
You know, like, I just wanted to put that out there, because for a while I was like, what is she supposed to be? And it's like, she's got the white streaks in her hair, which is reminiscent of Elsa Lancaster in the Bride, as the Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh yeah, for sure. And one of the things that I have just as sort of point form notes, because this is, again, fish out of water kind of, not only is the daughter not like the family, and you get that sense also with the, you know, Adams family and Munster do that. You've got the person that seems regular that also has to somehow either explain or get people to understand their family. So, but this is even beyond that, because this is a very high level society type that's, and you could just see that. So that's kind of a fish out of water type story, similar to some of the John Hughes movies, where you have the young daughter played by Molly Ringwald in like half of his films, who is falling for the guy that has nothing to do with her
right.
level of society. And then, of course, those friends of that person don't like them and so on. So one of the things is we are already drawn in to Lily and Herman Munster. We wish for their acceptance. We're on their side. We want their differences to be accepted. We want good things to happen to them. We can also understand what it means ourselves in our lives to be not included in things. We also want to be understood. We want to be accepted for who we are. We want to be appreciated. We have always felt like we are outsiders on the fringes of society, especially with us being interested in science fiction, fantasy, and horror, which already puts us outside the norm. We also want to be seen, and we want to be brought into life and not to be shunned. So us and our fans that listen to this show are drawn immediately to these families, and definitely. We hope the best for them, and we really feel for them, and I think that's an important aspect of it.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things too that sort of struck me with watching, you know, this idea of like Marilyn and her family is it really plays on the perspective that I think most teenagers have when they're trying to fit into their world, and they're petrified of, you know, their peer group seeing their family and seeing them have to interact with their family. And I swear to God, like, I think that almost every teenager has felt like, oh, my parents are so weird. No, I don't want the people to have to see me with my parents, you know? Mm. And that's definitely a thing with the Munsters, you know, not that Marilyn does not in any way sort of shun her family. If anything, it's the other way around. She's willing to let people slide if they're not accepting of her family.
Yeah, we also like all these little details that they add, and they keep adding episode to episode. For example, that when Herman Munster is stomping on the floor and he moves this carpet or whatever, or this floor mat away, and there's looks like an entrance downstairs. Well, guess what? Grandpa is in his lab in the basement doing right. stuff.
Yeah.
Then, of course, Yvonne DiCarlo with little Bo Peep. So, the father of Tom dressed up as Frankenstein, which was kind of a very cool, unexpected moment, especially when they say, don't do anything to offend them. And then you get a shot of him dressed looking like Herman, like obviously he's going to cause some offense. The babysitter, the cat that roars, and Nevermore from the Raven in the clock.
I love that Raven cuckoo clock.
Nevermore, you can't think.
Yeah, Eddie's pet Spot, which you only see the shadow, which looks like some kind of dinosaur-like creature. It's just these little details that make the show.
Yeah, and it's fun the way the writers sort of were spoofing these other shows that had existed, and shows like Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best. Now, Connelly and Mosier, the writers of this episode, were also the creators of Leave It to Beaver. So much of the Munsters was really just Leave It to Beaver with a twist. where you've got the family unit, and we're inside checking out the domestic reality that they live in. Dave, did you have any other thoughts, or should we move on to the Addams Family?
I think that's it for me for that episode.
All righty, then let's channel surf over to the Addams Family.
You're right.
Now, I know we've talked a lot about Commander Tom over the years, but I can't talk about the Addams Family without mentioning Commander Tom, the Commander Tom show out of Buffalo. When my parents first moved to Toronto before grade two, I was so excited to get so many more TV channels than we had in rural southeastern Ontario. In particular, we could get the big three American channels out of Buffalo, including Channel 7's Commander Tom and Rocket Ship 7 shows. Now, I have a clear memory, I don't know how accurate it is, of the first thing I saw on TV when we arrived at our new home was the Addams Family on the Commander Tom show. And I was hooked. I'd never seen anything like it. And I really do feel like it was on for the next like 4 years on the Commander Tom show. So I did become quite familiar with this one. So I've got a question for you, David. Do you remember there was a schoolyard parody song, almost a filk of the Addams Family theme song?
Part of it is when I looked it up and when you also shared just that first line, I said, oh yes, just sort of like that one about the Batmobile lost its wheel, the Joker got away, yeah, which is one of the more famous ones. Right. But once I saw this line about when Uncle Fester farted, I thought, yes, we sang that one in the schoolyard.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm not going to get too far into it, but as you said, yeah, the line was the Addams Family started when Uncle Fester farted, et cetera, et cetera. yeah, exactly. Right up there with Batman, Batman smells. So I was thinking, does that qualify this as proto filk?
I think it does, actually. This is a sign of filk, and I don't know enough history or enough about it, but definitely those ones from the early to mid 70s that were sung in high schools during recess were definitely, or in the schoolyard, were definitely filk. I just don't know if there was stuff that preceded that. I'm sure there must have been, but these, you know, everyone knew it. That's the thing, you know, everyone knew the original songs, sort of like the Spider-Man one, but also you've got these parodies, and those parodies, we just had a lot of fun singing them.
Yeah, and that's amazing. I find it fascinating that in a world, the world that we lived in that was pre-internet, like how did things go like the equivalent of viral? Because certainly they weren't being broadcast on TV, and there were TV standards. So like the actual lines to this, which would refer to, I guess, intellectual mental development, you could never do now. Like you would be canceled. But you might remember this one. We used to sing in elementary school, "Hey, hey, get out of my way. I just got back from the USA," and we would like link arms and like walk through the school, like the schoolyard. And if you got like somebody came over you, it was almost like Red Rover, where you had to join the line. But it's like, how is it everybody in the world our age in North America knows that? Because it's not like it was in a film. How did it spread from school to school to, you know, across? And maybe it's just a Canadian thing, because, hey, why would you sing that in the States, right?
There's also those camping songs, or when you're in a school field trip, and you know, I have no glasses, and or I have no specs, I cannot see.
Ate a peanut, that one, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, how did those get worldwide or North American-wide kind of thing? Like somehow, because there was not much in the way of the internet. Okay, there wasn't any. There wasn't much in the way of cell phones, because there weren't any. Yeah. And how does one communicate all of these things unless it's somehow word of mouth or someone going to some other city? And like, I just don't know how these got spread the way they did.
It's incredible.
I remember the one that the one about we all fall down.
Oh, right, which is like centuries old.
Yes,
ashes. Yeah, ring around the rosy, pocket full of posies. Ashes. Yeah,
ashes. We all fall down.
Yeah, and that one is incredible. And yeah, that one is incredible because clearly, you know, you have a look at it, and it's a song about death, right? And
yeah, the song that
children sing about death.
Yes. Yeah, the plague and how they all catch it. So when you're all falling down, you're representing all these people that died from the plague.
Yeah.
But somehow that was something we did in the 70s.
You're right. And it was changed at one point, or some versions have hasha, hasha. But
yes.
But the original lines are actually ashes, ashes, we all fall down. Like meaning ashes, ashes, we all die.
I always had hasha, hasha, the version that we did, but that also represents silence and death. It's as
true.
Well.
Yeah, really, right? What could be more stifling than death?
Yeah, but we'll get to poetry in a few minutes, I think. Yeah,
that's right. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. And how it's, you know, we are the safest people in our communities, David, because as we've learned from the Addams Family, criminals fear poetry. So anyway, we'll get into that in a minute. All right. We talked about the Addams Family theme when we listed our favorite TV shows, our favorite TV theme songs. That's what I'm trying to say. Let's sort of leave it at, you know, it's super iconic and it does set the stage. That theme, it felt sophisticated. There was a lot of subtext going on, and maybe there were just gags in the show that were over my head. Who knows? Mm. But I did know I wanted in on the joke. I realized after doing our rewatch that I think a lot of my personal romantic repartee comes via Gomez Addams.
I do think our guests are charming, don't you?
Yes, especially the one with the scar.
Reminds me of Rupert Styx.
Oh.
Has the same beautiful, beady eyes.
I thought we had agreed, Morticia, never to mention the name of Rupert Styx again.
Gomez, darling, you're not still jealous?
You were engaged to him.
Oh, well, I was just a silly young girl then. I was fascinated by his long fingernails and the way his lip curled when he smiled.
He was a handsome devil. Morticia, please, never mention his name again.
I promise. Bubble.
Carita mia.
When we're together, darling, every night is Halloween.
And man, oh man, Carolyn Jones as Morticia is not far behind Julie Newmar as one of my favorite TV women in black, I realized.
Yeah, and part of this, it's a bit just odd and weird how, because we've done various shows over the years, which, you know, if anyone actually listened to our show, we would have been canceled by now, but just kidding. But, you know, how we've had genre crushes, Beefcake and Cheese, and we've done various things. I don't think at any of those we may have mentioned Carolyn Jones as Morticia, which is a complete oversight. The other thing that we missed is we had we're bringing justice today. Also, the idea, we also had one season because we like to do episodes based on you know, February 14th and Valentine's Day. So that's why we did these things like the genre crushes, Beefcake and Cheesecake. We also did one called Love on the Set, where we talked about various genre TV shows or movies where actually people met each other and fell in love. And that we missed a few of those. And certainly one of those could have been Carolyn Jones and
John Astin. I want to say John
Astin.
John Saxon. Oh, and by the way, so I did not know this until recently, that Sean Astin is the son of John Astin. So, and of course, John Astin was a hobbit in the Lord of the Rings trilogies, and at least in the Hobbit films. Mm. He, of course, had the famous, you and I are sports fans, he played the titular character of Rudy in the film Rudy. That's Sean Astin, son of John Astin.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, too, that You know, another reason that some of the show really resonated with me was I was a tall kid when I was in elementary school. I was taller than many of my female teachers by grade five. And back then there were verbal put downs because this is the whole thing about the era that we grew up in. Being different in any way was not necessarily a good thing. Right? Anything that drew attention to yourself was not a good thing in a time that really did love conformity. So there were verbal put downs for any kids that stood out. And if you were tall, you got called a string bean or lurch. And which, of course, goes back to the Addams Family and the character Lurch. And I learned to love Lurch on the show. He was hilarious. And I could live with, you know, being called Lurch.
Yeah, very understated and very strong and very cool character, because you really felt for him, because he was almost someone that couldn't really speak in a way, like just bring on regular conversation. Because it always seemed like he was someone who had to think before he can speak. He can only say a few words at a time. He's always being under the pressure of people speaking faster, suggesting there's this one there trying to set up a date for this one woman that showed up. And they're even suggesting that maybe Lurch should date her, and just his looks, also that moan of his.
Yeah, his
was just brilliant.
How do you do
yes.
that? Something like that. Yeah.
Well, the Addams Family ran on ABC from Friday, September 18th till April 18th, 1966.
And cartoonist Charles Addams created the characters in the Addams Family in the 30s. His single-pane comic strips often ran, as we've said earlier, in The New Yorker between 1938 and 1988. According to John Javna's cult TV book, ABC TV executive David Levy noticed an Addams Family book in a New York store window and thought, here's an idea for a great TV show. In early 1964, ABC learned that CBS planned a Monster Family sitcom for the fall. CBS was the number one network, and ABC was number three, so ABC wanted to copy the front runner. But of course, the irony is that they were copying a copy of the show that they were about to do. Dave, can you refresh our failing memories? Who were the stars of the show again on The Addams Family?
John Astin is Gomez Addams. He was originally asked to read for the part of Lurch. He also played the Riddler on Batman 66. Carolyn Jones as Morticia Frump Addams, original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Ted Cassidy. Yeah, I love the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That's one of my favorite films. Ted Cassidy as Lurch the Butler also appeared, well, everywhere. He was in Star Trek, The Incredible Hulk, Lost in Space, Batman, Bonanza, $6 Million Man, Bionic Woman, The Man from Atlantis. He's definitely, if we were ever do an episode on the Genre Hall of Fame, Ted Cassidy would have to be one of the honorary, one of the recipients.
Absolutely. He? Yeah. Yeah. Along with
Felix.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say along with Felix Silla, who was Cousin It, right?
Yeah. Cousin It, also a Genre Hall of Famer, having played Tweaky on Buck Rogers, and we're going to be doing a Buck Rogers show soon, and appearing in, among other things, Star Trek, Planet of the Apes, Night Gallery, Demon Seed, Battlestar Galactica, Return of the Jedi, Spaceballs, and Batman Returns. That's a lot.
That is nuts. Like, you know, when you're able to do a list like that, you're pretty much a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, we definitely like our friends that are the actors and actresses that keep returning to, you know, science fiction, fantasy, and horror, the whole genre thing, because some people may look at it, look down on it, or be dismissive, or not want to do that kind of thing. But for every good actor and actress that does it, it just adds to the overall, like, we're at a point now, you know, 2024, at the, when this comes out, that things are possibly as good as they've ever been for science fiction, fantasy, and horror. And that helps with the fact that we've had so many dedicated artists that have been involved in the productions throughout the decades. Lisa Loring is Wednesday Adams. Ken Weatherwax is Pugsley, or in brackets, I guess, Poobert. Is there a joke in there somewhere?
Well, it's funny. From what I understand, when Charles Adams, when the show was greenlit, the producers approached Adams, first of all, and said, hey, your characters don't have names. Can you name them for us? Which he delighted in doing, like coming up with Morticia, based on Mortician. So his first name that he came up with for what became Pugsley was Pubert. And they were like, we can't say that on TV. But I have learned that in one of the Addams Family films, I think it was the second one, there is a baby born at the end of the film, and they call him, they pronounce it the way you did, not Pubert, but Pubert. So anyway, it's great that the name actually did get sort of get it put out there. Sorry, Dave.
Also had Jackie Coogan as Uncle Fester and a Blossom Rock as Grandmama.
Yeah, and they're all just awesome. Like they all bring something to it. And Dave, before we go on, I have an Addams Family Beatleism. When Ringo Starr met John Astin in 1965, he greeted Astin by grabbing his hand and kissing his way up his arm. And that came to me from the book Cult TV by John Javna. But as soon as I saw that, it's like, oh, Beatleism! I got a Beatleism. We're not doing a dream casting, but it struck me afterwards that Anya Taylor-Joy would probably make a really great Morticia. She's got the tall, long, beady. Sorry, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. Tall, lanky, I guess, body. That's it. Not beady, but body, and you know, very interesting, serious face. So. Oh, and there was a Lurch hit single, which I have to play for you now. You ready for it, Dave?
Yeah.
Here we go. Needle Drop.
Now everybody come on and do it. It's easy and you really like to do it.
All right, let's exhume our Addams Family Halloween episode, suitably titled as Halloween with the Addams Family. Here's the episode synopsis from Wikipedia. Mistaking two robbers named Claude and Marty, who are played by Don Rickles and Skip Homier, for trick-or-treaters, the family takes them in for a Halloween celebration. The robbers agree because they are hiding out from the police and their car has run out of gas in front of the Adams' house. They put up with the creepy household's holiday festivities as best they can because they spot Gomez's desk full of loose cash. Unbeknownst to all, Thing is the character that is just a hand, basically, is on to them and ready to take matters in hand. When they finally manage to escape the house, it's only into the waiting arms of the police. The episode was written by Keith Fowler and Phil Leslie. It was directed by Sidney Lanfield. What did you think of this one, my friend?
I like this one also. I've always been a fan of Don Rickles. I know that some people may not appreciate some of the humor that he does, but I think he, you know, pushes limits, which a lot of good comedians do with language and how we treat each other and so on. And he had been in a number of things, some movies in the 60s and so on, and he's had a very long career. So he's someone that I've always liked. And I also like some of the lines, like Uncle Fester saying, "Why, Gomez, you're the Michelangelo of Halloween pumpkins," or so to say, Halloween pumpkins. Morticia says, "Darling, you have the soul of an artist and the touch of a surgeon." And Gomez says, "Halloween always inspires me." And the fact that they're using Uncle Fester as the face of a pumpkin is just such a wonderful moment because he's got such an expressive face. You're right. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to interject something quickly here, David. And for our listeners, you know, because we care about you, we prep and we make notes. But this is just something that occurred to me recently. I saw a clip of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is returning to theaters for Halloween. And I thought, wow, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre in many ways shares a lot of similarities with the Addams Family, because, except tonally, of course, you know, that's the big difference. But you've got this family, which you have the family in Texas Chainsaw, and people stumble onto the house. You know, they come in and then they realize, oh my God, I have to get out of here.
Yeah.
And then they try to get out, but, and like with the Addams Family, often the family tries to implore their guests to stay. And then they're sort of like, oh, I wonder why they ran off so quickly. But anyway, I just wanted to share that. You know, you may think I'm crazy, but I do think there's an odd link there. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No worries. It's nice how the eventual sound effects of a siren makes the two criminals want to stay in the house. And I love this line that Morticia says. I think it's rather heartwarming that adults get in the Halloween spirit. Also, the idea that Gomez is going to read a Halloween poem. And then Don Rickles' character said, "We'd be better off in jail," which is
we should let folks hear the recital of the Halloween poem. Oh, and just before we do, too, I love just how excited Gomez is, like, to be partaking in the festivities and with guests, and he yells like, "Fester, get the Halloween poems," and he sends off Lurch to get the bobbing game. But yeah, so here's the clip of the Halloween poem.
It was was Halloween evening, and through the abode, not a creature was stirring, not even a toad. Jack-o'-lanterns are hung on the gallows with care.
The guide, sister witch, as she flies through the air.
Drawn by 8 beautiful bats. And she calls out to them.
Come flitter, come flutter, come flapper and flyer.
Come chitter, come chatter, come vicious vampire. Oh, excuse me.
Is something wrong? Heavens, what in the world brought that on?
It's obvious. They just don't like poetry.
Dave, I want to hear more about your some of the notes you have, but I just wanted to throw out quickly. I love when, at the beginning of the episode, when the mail arrives, and again, we get the whole, you know, thing always brings the mail or brings it up through his box. Anyway, and it's a new carving knife for Gomez. And Wednesday asks, can I play autopsy with it?
Yes.
It's just like, it's so wonderful. Like that in 19, whatever, they have this little 6-year-old girl who part of her homeschooling is that she plays autopsy, or maybe that's her free time if she's playing. But we know that she does have studies that like tie into these other macabre things. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, and they also, then the idea of playing an old-fashioned Halloween game, like bobbing for the crab. And of course, the crab's alive and full of snap, too, someone says. And then the police show up and they're not, you know, they're not costumes. We are police officers. And then someone says, I'd rather wrestle a lion, would you? Here, kitty, and a lion shows up. So, yeah, the idea of the hide and seek and lurch. Perfect moment for him to moan. Thing, this is a strong episode for Thing, by the way.
Oh,
Thing
really not is. Only
changes, not only delivers that mail, which is that carving knife, which is how the whole episode gets started. Thing also does 2 more things, so to speak. Are we going to get into that thing
yeah,
where we keep saying Thing?
Yeah.
So Thing also takes the gun out of one of the people's pockets and puts a banana there, and also locks the front door and holds on to the key.
There's
several moments that Thing does. And then, of course, they're sent up the river, which, of course, good. They needed a vacation. So there's all this humor built into this where they're dealing with them that they don't quite understand what's going on. They don't realize that they're felons. They don't realize that they don't have their best interests at heart. It's always Gomez and Morticia looking for the best in people, welcoming people, and being that much better, you know. You know, they're very good in that kind of, you know, the values towards other people.
Sure.
You're also mentioning to me how these two shows almost are like the perfect family units, even though they're a bit ghoulish and ghastly and a bit different and odd. They're almost the perfect family units.
Yeah. Yeah. I did want to mention, you're talking about Thing reminded me that, I guess I was going to use that stupid phrase that you see online where people say I was today years old when, but it doesn't apply because it was a couple of weeks ago. But recently I found out that it was Ted Cassidy, his hand that was doing Thing. You know, it's only in scenes that he had to be in with Thing that he couldn't do it, where they would have somebody else come in and be the hand or be Thing. And sometimes, generally it was a right hand, but sometimes he said that he would just to, you know, keep it fresh. He would put a left hand in just to see if people would notice, you know. I had a few notes there, Dave, if you want me to,
yeah, please
present those. Well, we do start, of course, with Lurch playing the harpsichord, which is a very Lurch thing to do, and it's sort of like a great thing that we see often throughout the series. I loved when Pugsley and Wednesday are getting ready. They're going to put their costumes on, their Halloween costumes. And then they come down the stairs and everybody in the family is mortified to see what they are wearing, which is basically just unassuming adults. That's how they're dressed. And the family worries that they are too hideous for the neighbors.
Yes.
And so I think it's Fester who says, you need to tell people when you go to their door, do not be alarmed. We are only little children.
Yeah.
And that just cracked me up. Like, do not be alarmed. We are only little children. Let's see. What else do I have? Of course, the classic quote, Morticia to Gomez. She says, when we're together, darling, every night is Halloween.
Right.
Which is a great line. And I have heard that while the series was shooting, both Carolyn Jones and John Astin were breaking up with their respective spouses, and that Astin and Jones delighted in each other's company, both on and off camera. They really did have like quite a love for each other. Oh, let's hear the epilogue. Let's listen into the epilogue to see how this all wraps up.
Is there anything new in the paper tonight?
Oh, nothing much. A revolution in South America, a war in Asia, a flood. Oh, here's something. It says our friends Marty and Claude were sent up the river.
Good. They needed a vacation.
We asked our listeners on Facebook to vote for which show they preferred, whether it was The Munsters or The Addams Family. We will get to our winner shortly. But first, let's compare the two shows, The Munsters and The Addams Family, going toe to toe.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, they both ran for two seasons.
They both had great theme songs.
They both had great casts.
They both featured great gags.
They both had great comedic pairings. Astin and Carolyn Jones, and on Addams Family, and Gwynn and Al Lewis on The Munsters.
They both had great kids, but I think Wednesday and Pugsley would probably get the nod.
The Munsters had two cool cars designed by George Barris, who also gave us the Batmobile and the Monkeymobile. The Munsters' cars were Herman's Munster coach, while Grandpa drove the 18-foot-long Dragula hot rod with a built-in coffin. So that's probably, I don't know what the Addams guys drove. I think sometimes we saw Lurch driving something or other, an older car, but that has to go to the Munsters.
Yeah, and both shows had amazing co-stars. The Addams Family had the hilarious Ted Cassidy as Lurch, Felix Sela as Cousin It, and the Hand in a Box creature thing, Advantage, Addams Family.
Both families had houses that look a little like Norman Bates' gothic abode in Psycho. The Munsters live at 1313 Mockingbird Lane, and the Addams Family resides at 001 Cemetery Lane.
The Munsters are all about suburban conformity and assimilation. The Addamses are about individualism, being true to who you are. According to cult TV author John Javna, they were TV's first proto-punks.
And both shows are precursors to shows like The Hilarious House of Frightenstein, Groovy Ghoulies, Monster Squad, and even the recent What We Do in the Shadows.
Both shows have had modern incarnations, including Rob Zombie's The Munsters and the series of Addams Family films, as well as the recent Netflix series Wednesday, starring Jenna Ortega in the leading role.
Both shows were hurt, as we've said before, by the advent of color TV, and in particular, the arrival of Batman. This Halloween, as we have also said, we decided to ask our listeners and Facebook members to vote on which show they preferred, and we have tabulated those votes that were cast, and we have a winner for you now.
Troy, if you're ready, would you please announce the winner of the great Addams Family Munsters Halloween Smackdown?
I would be honored, sir. Drum roll, please. And the winner is the Addams Family.
There you have it. Congratulations to the Addams Family. It was a landslide. Thank you, friends, for taking the time to cast your ballots.
Remember, democracy only works if we all play along. We want to thank you all for listening. You know the drill with our social media. You can check us out at Facebook, and you can, come on board and do things like vote for shows like this. We love to have our interactions there. You can go to our website, which is twoofca. All of our shows are there, or you can find them on your favorite podcast providers, such as Spotify, and we are on the Apple Podcasts as well, but pretty much we're everywhere now if you're looking. And we want you all to have a great, happy, and safe Halloween.
I'm David Klink.
And I'm Troy Harkin. And please, do not be alarmed.
Because we are only two old farts
talking sci-fi.
Better make your speech, children.
Do not be alarmed. We are only little children.